Wiley Publishing, in association with Imagine That Studios and Binary Studios, presents.
Do a podcast?
Do you want to do a podcast, Serena?
Okay.
Okay.
Podcasting for Dummies, the companion podcast. Going above and beyond podcasting for dummies. And now your host, Chuck Tomasi.
Hello and welcome. I am Chuck Tomasi. As T said, I'm co-author of Podcasting for Dummies, and you are listening to the companion podcast, and man, it feels good to talk to you again. You probably noticed there's quite a difference in audio quality from the first episode I did out in my backyard on my mobile phone with the earbuds to the second one that T and Pip did on the road with the Shure MV5 or M5V. That's what it was. That's because this episode is being done from the studio. And as we point out in the book, there's really no right or wrong way to do a podcast. It's entirely up to you. The voice you want to give your show, and even maybe even a special episode, maybe done a little differently, one on the road and one in the studio. It's up to you. There's, like I said, there's no right or wrong way to do it. In some cases, the studio is the way to go. If you want a smooth, mellow voice, or you're narrating or doing voiceover work for a video, whatever it happens to be, you're going to want different tonal qualities, different background noises. If you're out on the road and you want to hear that subway going by, that's great. If you're, again, if you're doing a narration for a book, you probably want to, don't want to leave that world. We'll talk about that in just a minute. So there's really ways you can do this if you want to do it a la carte or even somewhere in between. There's just a wide range of ways you can do this. Such is the freedom of a podcast. Well, what was that thing we heard at the beginning? Where T comes in and says, Wiley Publishing, in association with Imagine That. That's what we call an intro. He produced that. He recorded that in his studio and put the music behind it. We'll talk about the production on that a little bit. But I played that live, right? I sat here, pushed a button, waited for it to play out, and then started talking. That's what some people would call live to hard drive. You could edit just the voice work of this podcast, for example, and put that in at the end and mix it all in with multiple tracks, and pretty easy to do. Not a lot of effort involved with that. It's not as scary as it sounds. I've been doing both. It really depends on the situation and what I'm doing. If I'm doing an interview with somebody and I'm meeting them at their office or they're coming in the studio, I may just want the voice so I can chop it up and edit it and craft it the way I want and then put in the beginning and the end and the various elements around that, or as Craig and I do on Technorama on a regular basis, we push the buttons in the show and we're ready to go. So there's different ways you can do that. You can also put in various sound effects. I regularly use a soundboard. I've got an application on the computer and I can remote control it for my iPad. So, you know, if I want to, hey, put in a rim shot. There was supposed to be a joke in there. I can have these all queued up. And as one of my friends, Keith Lane from TG Geeks podcast does, he likes to take over the show. He's in the studio so often. I have a special channel on the mixer with a line that feeds over to his seat in the studio. And we get extra sound effects because he's ready with them as I need them. Now, you don't need to spend a ton of money. Let's talk about the mixer, for example. I mentioned that Keith has his own channel into the mixer. I've still got in my closet my good old Behringer Zenix 802, $60, might be a little more nowadays. It might be closer to $80. I haven't checked recently, but when I bought it about 7 years ago, it was about $60. It was the second generation of the UB-802, so you might still find those out there somewhere. Two microphone channels in, great for me and maybe somebody else that I want to talk to. XLR, so nice. High quality, you can put high quality microphones into this thing and a couple of line ins for maybe a Skype call. It does have an auxiliary channel, so I can do a mix minus back to the Skype caller. We talk about that in the book. I'm going to keep referring to it because there's a lot of good information in there. A lot of people like to do Skype calls. And that little $60 mixer ran Technorama with Craig in South Carolina and me in Wisconsin. And then when I moved to Phoenix, I obviously didn't need it anymore. I got a bigger one. But that worked great for a number of years. Very easy to control, very easy to pack up. I did bring it on the road a few times for a work-related podcast video series that we do, and it worked great. I was very happy with that, and I still have it as just an emergency travel mixer if I need something small, something light to go on the road. Now my workhorse is a bigger mixer, the Tascam DM4800. It's got 48 channels in there. It's all digital. It's got built-in effects and processors and routing. It's actually a lot more than I can handle. I haven't figured out how to run the whole darn thing. But I know the basics, and I know where to push the buttons and make the audio shape the way I want it to with the, you know, the EQ. But it really is up to you what end of the spectrum you want to go on. And it's not entirely all about the mixer. That's a good part of it, but it all starts with the microphone. So let's back up and talk about microphones. We talk about them a little bit in the book. You can go out and get yourself a Shure SM58 for, $50, $60. They're not terribly expensive, and these are the workhorse of the industry. They sound great. I've heard some wonderful podcasts out of a Shure SM58. Nice microphone. We use them at our church. They're great. I wish I had them all over the place. You can then go up a little more into range. What you're listening to me speak on now is a Heil PR40, a bit of a higher ender. I've been an avid fan of the Shure SM7B. I had a couple of them in the studio until recently. I also have a series of Rode Procasters in the microphone, so in the studio, excuse me. So it really runs the range of spectrum. I've been in this a while. I've sort of become a bit of an audiophile nerd, and as the budget from the wife allows, I do an upgrade here or there. So over about 12 years, I've done a few upgrades, but I still have the ability to get out the old $60 mixer and a cheapo microphone and make a podcast on the road. Is it going to have the same mellow, smooth tones as a $400 microphone into a $7,000 mixer? Not really. I may not need that for the situation that I'm in, and you may not either. If you're just starting out, start on the low end if you're not sure. If you're sure you want to do this and you're doing this for professional reasons, and you say, I'm going to be a voiceover artist, probably don't want to start on the low end because that's not what you want your portfolio made up of. The other thing I want to talk about in studio microphones, and I have hit this in this studio until I did a few more upgrades, is condenser mics versus dynamic microphones. Condenser mics have a very wide pickup pattern. And if you are doing this on your own, condenser mic is fine. But I want to play you an audio sample of what happens if you get a bunch of people in a room with condenser microphones.
He's an auto body specialist.
I guess.
Earl Scheib can take care of your car for only $19.95.
How tall are these aliens?
Like 2 feet tall.
And well, what angle is this jackhammer coming down?
Well, you get the idea. So you can hear, it sounds like a conference room telephone where nobody is sitting close. And believe it or not, we were all on our microphones very close. There was me and Clinton Alvord from Comedy Forecast and a friend of ours, Scott Tyler, who gives a little chuckle in the beginning. So there were three channels on this, and they were all recorded their separate tracks, fortunately. So what I could do is when somebody wasn't talking into their microphone, I would effectively mute their microphone or mute their channel. And when they're isolated, it sounds a bit better.
He's an auto body specialist.
I guess.
Earl Scheib can take care of your car for only $19.95.
How tall are these aliens?
Like 2 feet tall.
And what angle is this?
So what I was doing is defeating all that echo that was bouncing around the room and my talking coming out on Clinton's microphone, really reducing the overall quality. That's what effect many condenser microphones in one room can have. Do that with a dynamic microphone, not as touchy. Because your pickup pattern is a lot closer to the microphone. If you drift too far away, you don't get heard. The other thing that can help with that is gates and compressors. Gates will, you can set a minimum threshold. So if somebody is far away or there's a fan running in the background, you're not going to hear it when you're not talking. It takes sort of a kick to hit it to a certain level before the microphone will start, or before the mixer or the processor will pick it up and start listening. So that's just some of the words of caution that I have if you're looking at condenser microphones. Again, Craig has used one by himself in his studio in South Carolina for a long time, and it's worked great. Sounds terrific. Just when we get in the same room and we both have condenser microphones, not so good because we're cross-talking like that. So once we've got this recording going, we can We got to record it somewhere, right? I can talk into a microphone and a mixer all day long, but unless I'm recording it, it doesn't do any good. One way is to record it to a computer. Very common way. You can set up Audacity or GarageBand on a Mac, or if you want, your higher-end packages like Adobe Audition or Apple's Logic Pro X. It's effectively doing the same thing. It's taking the input from either a line-in or USB with an analog-to-digital converter, some way to get that audio signal into the computer and record it. The other option is to use an external or an outboard recorder. I used my Zoom H2 for a long time. It's just line out of the mixer, pop it into the H2, and when you're ready to go, you hit record. Twice. Those of you who own H2s will know what I'm talking about. If you hit once, it's on standby, but the numbers don't start counting until you hit the second time. So that's now I use an H6, which is a bigger brother and has multi-track capability, which is how I did that previous recording. Same effect, same thing. You plug in the left and right channel and hit record when you're ready to go. Take the SD card out, put it in the computer, and then you can process it. Easy as that. So that's part of my studio rig. Microphone, mixer, recorder, and soundboard, so I can have drum rolls when there's an apparent joke or not. Things outside of the electronics that you also want to consider if you're setting up a studio are the acoustics. How much is the sound bouncing around? I am in what used to be two bedrooms, and if I opened this thing up, you would hear an echo in the background. You'd hear sort of a distant bounce of the sound off of the walls. So there is sound deadening equipment and some of it decorative, some curtains and just hanging on the wall various attributes. There's some sound deadening foam in key places in the room to stop some of that echo. So be aware, an easy test is just to make a clap. You make a clap, and do you hear it very quickly? Do you hear an echo off of the walls? If you do, hang some stuff on the walls. I believe T has a duvet hanging in his office to really deaden that sound. Some people have gone so far as their studio is completely soundproofed, sound deadened with acoustic foam. Others record in a closet. I've done a couple of voiceover works in a closet with sleeping bags that was stacked up, and that was probably one of the best acoustic environments I've ever been in for that particular recording. Unfortunately, I don't own that house anymore, and I don't own the sleeping bag, so that's not going to happen again. If you have multiple people in your studio, as I mentioned, I've got a studio set up for a number of people, can you see them? It's very handy to have line of sight to those people, so especially if you're doing maybe an interview with somebody on the other end. You can give hand signals, my turn, your turn, you go next, that sort of thing. Or it's the non-visual cues that can prevent interrupting as opposed to being out of line of sight. It gets a little more difficult and the conversation is a bit more awkward. Let's talk about heating and cooling. I am in a fairly warm room right now, not because I'm in Phoenix, Arizona, but because the air conditioning isn't running. I've got a mixer. I've got computers running. It's getting a little warm in here. We have air conditioning that I turn on right before we do Technorama on Sunday nights. That lowers it down and keeps it comfortable. But by the time we're done recording, after an hour, hour and a half, step out of the studio and you go, wow, it's nice and cool out here. So there's something about this room that we just have to deal with for a temperature. Be thinking about, is that air conditioning causing background noise? Do I have fans on the computer or ceiling fans? Or is there other ambient noise that could make an impact? In some cases, if I'm just doing a casual conversation like this, probably not going to make a difference. If I'm narrating something, maybe a professional voiceover for a video I'm doing for work, or T is doing a narration for one of his books, if you hear fans in the background, it takes you out of the moment, or other things that could impact it. A fire truck going by, or the garbage truck backing up to empty the dumpster, takes it out of the moment. One of my favorite stories was when I was living in our old house. I was recording voiceovers for videos at work, and someone would flush the toilet upstairs, and you could hear the flush, you could hear the water going through the pipe, and I would have to stop and be patient and sing a little song. I made up the toilet flushing song, and it was just something that lasted about 30 seconds till the tank got filled up, and I'd continue. Have to edit that part out. So there's different things in your environment that you want to be aware of. don't be afraid to experiment. Don't be afraid to try things out. That's the fun of podcasting. This is just some of the fun you can have in the studio with your microphones, mixers, and soundboards, and more. Whether this is just for you, or you want to have a few friends over and hijack the show like Keith does to mine, we've got specifics in the third edition of Podcasting for Dummies. You can find additional episodes of this show at podcastingfordummies.com and take a look at our products page for some of the items mentioned in this episode, as well as many of our other favorite podcast toys that I'm sure will fit into any budget or podcast style. Podcasting for Dummies, the companion podcast, is protected by Creative Commons, non-commercial, no derivatives, share alike, United States 3.0 license. Find out more at creativecommons.org. And yes, that was recorded live. Interested in starting a podcast? Then be sure to attend PIY 2017. PIY is the Podcast It Yourself Workshop, October 28th in Phoenix, Arizona. Learn about software, hardware, accessories, best practices, and more to make your podcast rock. Need more information? We'll have the authors of Podcasting for Dummies 3rd Edition, T. Morris and Chuck Tomasi, on hand to answer questions and sign books. Spaces are limited, so go to podcastingfordummies.com and sign up for PIY 2017. We look forward to seeing you there.